You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. Whether you meant to or not, you are listening to The Conversation, and I'm excited, honored, thrilled that you are spending any time with me, and I hope it's been a great day on your end. I hope it's been a wonderful week for you, and I can't believe the end of August is almost here, which means that fall is rapidly approaching, but genuinely, I hope and pray this finds you well today. Hey, today's guest is pole vaulter Olympian, and as of just a few days ago, silver medalist Chris Nielsen. I was pumped about being able to connect with Chris specifically so quickly after the Olympics, and he was a wonderful, wonderful guest. Chris hails from the great state of South Dakota. He pole vaulted for the University of South Dakota here, and we are loud and proud and excited about this silver medal that he has recently won. But Chris came on and he just shared his story, and he shared about this goal he had. And I know that so many of us are pursuing goals in our own lives, and I know this is going to be a huge takeaway from this interview for all of you. Also, my favorite part of what Chris shared was just his candidness start to finish. He shared and said what so many of us think and feel. And I know for myself, I'm always grateful for someone who just shares where they're actually at. It invites everyone else in the room to be honest and candid themselves. And so I hope that refreshes you as you listen. Hey, and one quick thing to note, oftentimes on The Conversation, I'll connect with a Christian author or a pastor or a Christian musician of some kind. This is slightly different. I'm not going to Chris for his Christian perspective. I'm not going to Chris to learn how to be closer in my relationship with Jesus, yet we still have so much to learn. I went to Chris again to hear his story and how to pursue different goals in our lives. And I'm guessing some of us who are listening right now are in a Christian bubble of some sort where we're surrounded only by solid Jesus-loving people. And so maybe you need to hear someone like Chris share, because it might bring you back to reality in some ways. And so as always, gosh, I'm excited for you to listen. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. I'm here with Olympian and silver medalist Chris. Want to welcome you to the conversation today.
Thank you for having me.
Huge honor.
Appreciate it.
We need to get this right out from the get-go, because this rarely happens that an Olympian in South Dakota can be said in the same phrase. But home is kind of sort of South Dakota. Went to the University of South Dakota. How crazy is this?
My coach, actually, Derek Miles, he was also an Olympian in the pole vault. He got a bronze medal in 2008 at Beijing Olympics. So it was kind of a stepping into his shoes a little bit whenever I turned professional after I finished college. And he kind of said it best. It's just like, even from like a really small school, because I think in the town of a million, it's got to be like 15,000 people max. Like during school year, peak D days, maybe you get 15 or 16,000 people. But you know, it's just cool because you can have really big things happen from a super small town, which I think is really cool. And it makes the welcome homes even better.
Yeah, it really, really does. Chris, if you want to share just a bit of your backstory, kind of where you're from and how you got into pole vaulting in general, like just kind of ready, set, go there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri, by my mom and dad, Karen and Mark Nielsen. I have an older sister. Her name's Nicole. She's 5 years older than me. Everyone's doing great. They all still live in the same house that I was born in. Obviously, my sister's, she's out now. She's married. She's pregnant right now. So congrats to her.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, she's doing her own thing. But I grew up, I was super into sports. I think I started like with T-ball when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I was bad. Like I couldn't hit. And the only thing I could do, I could run. And the coach said, you should probably try out for the soccer team, like a club thing or something. So I got with a guy.
This is your T-ball coach?
Yeah, my T-ball coach. He's like, you're bad. You need to go do another sport. And I was like, you know, I appreciate you being honest with me. He didn't tell me that. He told my mom. He was like, I don't know if T-ball is a thing, yeah, or baseball in general. He might just be better with his feet. She was right, or he was right. And I ended up playing soccer on the same club team from like 4 years old or 5 years old all the way up to junior year in high school. So it was a huge like family event thing.
Yeah.
Became best friends with everyone on the team and the coach and the whole like the soccer parties that we would do every single year. It was really cool to watch each other grow up. But I got to freshman year and obviously I couldn't play as much club soccer because high school kind of took over. So in the off season, because soccer's in the fall, you have to do some kind of training in the spring. So you can either do a different sport or you can do soccer training. And I didn't want to do soccer training because every like junior varsity or varsity kid was just like, it's the worst. Like you're going to hate your life, like, puking every day. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't sound great. So I looked at the sports and I was like, I'm not a tennis guy, but I'm probably better at track because I already like running around and doing things. And it was a weird like tallying off the list, like things I don't want to do and things I know I wouldn't be good at. I was like, I'm not big enough to throw and I know I'm not fast enough to like run the 100-meter dash. So I started looking around and the only coach I knew out at the track was my 8th grade English teacher. Her name is Stephanie Yen. And she was the pole vault coach. So I went over to her and she was like, yeah, give it a shot. Like, see how you do. And it was actually really bad. The first time, the first day I ever practiced pole vaulting, she just put a pole in my hands. And usually you would start at like you don't bend the pole. Like you would just kind of like run up and like see how it feels. But I started bending it like day one. And the first 3 times I ever went down the runway, I got spit back out on the runway. I didn't make the pit at all. Landed back on the track or the turf, whatever you want to call it. And like 3 times in a row, it was bad. It wasn't like I got seriously hurt or anything. I just kind of like, I either caught myself or I like flopped on my back like once. And I went to her and I was like, I really don't think I'm supposed to be this bad. She's like, you're not, but like you're not supposed to be this bad, but I think you might get better. So I just kept.
This is like the perfect picture for any kid. You can make your dreams become a reality. Like,
absolutely. 100%. You can start out sucking at something so bad. And then if you just keep at it, you can eventually do great
this
things.
This is great. I cut you off though. Keep
no,
going.
Don't worry about it at all. Yeah. So freshman year, I jumped like 10 feet. And then sophomore year, I jumped 12 with just a coach of my high school coach. And which isn't like terrible, but my dad came to me and this like all through the time since like 7th or 6th grade, I had been in this kind of military thing. It's a Civil Air Patrol. It's the like auxiliary branch of the Air Force. It's kind of like ROTC.
Yeah.
So I was super in the Air Force and like all through the time I was like, okay, I'm going to finish high school and I'm going to enlist in the Air Force, or I'm going to go to college and go to ROTC just so I can go to the Air Force. And I got super into this. Like I want to be a pararescue man, like the guys who jump out of the planes, like behind enemy lines and like go and like do like search, evade, rescue and escape and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was super into, I even went to like a 2.5 week camp. Cause I was like, I really want to do this. I really want to like be in the Air Force. I want to either enlist and like become a sergeant one day or like come in as an officer, do all that stuff. I was super into the Air Force. But my dad, like midway through high school, he's like, how serious are you about this pole vault thing? I was like, I'm pretty serious about it. I kind of like it. He's like, okay, cool. So we're going to do one of two things here. You can either one, get a scholarship, or two, you can enlist in the Air Force. Cause we can't do college thing. And it's not like my family was like massively poor or anything. It's just that college with the inflation rates over time is just so massively expensive right now. And an ROTC scholarship won't give you much. So, you know, it was a whole deal. But so I was like, yeah, I'm pretty serious about that. I kind of want to be good at this. And he was like, okay, cool. So we looked up private coaches in the area and there were two that came up. There was a guy named Todd Cooper who coaches in Excelsior Springs. And there was another guy named Rick Attig. And he coached at Nebraska like long time ago in like the 80s and the 90s, and then he switched off to Kansas right after that, and then he quit so he could go coach at a club.
Yeah.
So we went to Rick just because he was closer, and then within like 3 or 4 months I had jumped 15 or 15-6, and then at the end of that year, at the end of my junior year, I had jumped 17. We were like, okay, this is pretty good. Making the jump from 12-3 to 17 in a year. It was a pretty staunch difference. And usually whenever you want to go like division one, you probably want to jump like somewhere around like 16 feet or 16.
Okay. That's what I was just going to ask, just for perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Probably like D1, like highest college athletics, you want, if you want to get in with a decent like scholarship or even walk on, probably like a 16-foot jumper, 16-6, somewhere in there. So I jumped 17 at the state meet my junior year. And that's when I got the first call from Derek Miles, who's my coach now. He's also the associate director of track and field over at University of South Dakota. He's been there for, I don't even know, it's been such a long time. He's been there a long time. But he called me. He was super nice. And I went on about three official visits, because back in my day, I don't know the rules now, but back in the day, you could get five official visits. The university would like pay for you to come out. They would pay for your hotel and all that stuff. They'd keep you out there for like two full days, and then they'd send you on your way.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, here's the university. What do you think? And you either tell them, I like it or I don't like it. And they're like, okay, either way, get out. Because they can only have you on for like 48 hours, something like that. NCAA has a stupid amount of laws when it comes to recruiting kids, more than it has with actually keeping them in the NCAA. So I went to Derek and USD, my fourth official visit. It's only 5 hours away from Kansas City, so it's not that far. It was really good. It was actually the closest one I went to, because I think the first two were in Kentucky. It was the University of Kentucky and Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
So both were like, I think I flew into both of them, actually. They're like pretty far away, too far to drive. I went to Illinois State, which is like an 8.5 hour drive.
Yeah.
Super nice. That was probably my number two if I wasn't going to go to USD. And then I went to USD. Love the campus, love the people, love the small town vibes, which is weird because I grew up in Kansas City, which I don't know the exact number, but it's like 350,000, maybe like 400,000 people in the city, like skyscrapers and all. Like you can just go down there and like spend a whole day, get lost in between the skyscrapers. It's super cool. So going from that to literally a plateau of earth with small buildings and 15,000 people, it was a huge change. It was almost like culture shock coming back from a country that doesn't speak English, and then having someone in the airport ask you in English, like, how's it going? It's like, sorry.
Oh, that this sums up Vermilion, South Dakota so well.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
So we get there, love everything. And at the end of the visit, Derek and Lucky Huber, he's the head coach and director of track and field. They both sat me down in like this office with my parents, and Lucky was like, what do we got to do to make you a Coyote? I was like, I don't know. I like everything so far. It's pretty cool. And Derek, he was like, okay, I'll tell you this and then you can be on your way, cause we got to finish up the visit here real quick. And I was like, okay, sure. And he's like, you can go anywhere in the world to become a better pole vaulter, but you will never find a coach who cares about you more than I do. And I was like, done. Like, give me the paper now. I will sign. And he was like, no. Like, you can't sign now. You got to wait for like a couple months. And I was like, okay, well, I'm verbally committing. And then like 2 months later, day one that was available, because I think there's like a week time period that you get to sign. It was like day one at like 2 a.m. We wanted to like be sure. I like signed my name, and I sent a picture to Derek, and I was like, I'm in.
Crazy. So you go to USD. From there, what takes place for you, pole vaulting, life-wise, that kind of thing?
Yeah, pole vaulting, life-wise. Pole vaulting was, it was good. I always thought that I was going to go backwards, because every college athlete, when they get their freshman year, they're away from home and mom's cooking and everything's strange to them. They don't really have any friends. They got to make new ones, and like everything's new. They have to take on the whole student athlete, where they got to put school first because they can't be an athlete if they're not good in school. They might like become ineligible or something like that. So it's a whole deal, and there's a lot of stress that goes into it. And I thought I handled it really well. I came into college with a girlfriend, and that didn't turn out well, but that ended up ending somewhere around my freshman or sophomore year. And then after that, just continued with life. I mean, I had the whole college experience, like going to house parties and like studying for hours with my friends, and athletes had very specific, like, you need to study this many hours. I think it was like 6 hours a week to meet your athletic study requirements. That's why it's student athlete. They're very like, you need to be a student first. We don't care if you're here for sports. Like, we're paying you to be here for sports, but you need to be good in school before you be good on the track or anywhere else. So freshman, sophomore year, did a lot of maturing, because I came in like really cocky. Like, my senior year in high school, I broke the national high school record, and
Oh my gosh.
I came in and I was like, I'm the greatest. Like, this is like my town. And then I got knocked down so fast, so hard by all my friends, which is good. They're all still my best friends today. I just went to the lake with two of them who I've known since freshman year. But it was good. I was really glad they like knocked me down. Otherwise I'd be a mean guy. I'd be a jerk right now, but.
In what ways did they knock you down? Like, just to hear that part, like in a positive sense.
Well, you know, all of the pole vaulters were from super far away. Like, no one was, well, there was one guy from South Dakota, but we had a guy from Arkansas. We had a guy from Indiana, California, Arizona. Like, everyone is from everywhere across the country because Derek likes to go out and recruit people like all across the nation.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending on where you're from, you may or may not be more straightforward. And one of my best friends still to this day, Nick Johnson, he is from Arkansas. He lives there now too. He graduated. One day I won't use the exact words he used because there were a lot of cuss words. He was like, you need to quit being a freaking like asshole. And I was like, am I being one? And he's like, absolutely, dude, you suck. And I was like, damn. But he's from Arkansas. So everyone down there is just like, get to the point and
yeah,
all that. And then my friend Ethan, and Caleb, they also came up and they're like, you got to tone it down a little bit. And then also, of course, Derek, he was never just like he never told me or looked at me like I was points for like conference or national championships. Yeah. He was always a mentor, kind of like a second father figure. He was also kind of like, you need to change your attitude if you want to like keep your friends around, because right now you're kind of losing them. So I had to make this huge transformation all through my sophomore year. It's an ongoing transformation, but I would say I'm much better off now mentally and like verbally than I was 4 or 5 years ago, just because I was young and stupid and had too much success come on too fast.
Yeah.
Without knowing how to handle it or having someone to reel me in. I can look back on that time and say that I was not as good as a person as I would like to think I am now, but it was a very good time transformation.
While in college, are the Olympics at all in the back of your mind?
No.
And what shift did that, like, how did that begin to shift? And at what point are you like, not just you, but even a coach is beginning to say like, this might be a possibility for you?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was a weird backward system, because I think a lot of kids grow up thinking that they have goals and that they can immediately accomplish them, because they're like, oh, I think I can make the Olympics, or I think I can make the U.S. national team for anything, or I think I can, you know, go to D1 universities or whatever it may be. Like, you can accomplish your goals before like having done something to make you think that you can do them. I was the exact opposite. I needed to accomplish something that was so far past the barrier of acceptance that if I didn't do that, I wouldn't believe that I could do it. So it was a really weird backwards thing. Like, I didn't think I could make a U.S. national team for a world championships or an Olympics until I actually jumped a height far better than the world standard that was required to make that team.
Wow.
So I think my freshman year, I made the world championship team in 2017 for the London World Championships. But the world standard at the time was like 18.6 or something like that. And I went to the U.S. championships not even at all thinking about pole vault. I was just like, whatever, I'm done with the season. Just kind of tired of the whole thing. And I went and I jumped a personal best of 18.10, which is far, like, I know it doesn't seem like much, but like 4 inches or even 2 inches in the pole vault world is like, that's a big difference, especially from like 18.10 to 19 feet or, you know, so on and so forth. So it was then when I was like, okay, I can probably make a world team, but I had already made it because the other guys had dropped out and I got third and I take the top three to the championships. Yep. So I got third at that meet. And that's when I was like, oh, I could probably like make a whole gig out of this. And then that's when Derek at the same time was like, don't think about this as a job. You have 4 years of college left. Don't even think about it. Just have fun in college and just be a normal college student athlete. And I was like, yeah, for sure. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I was like, okay, if I do want to be a professional, I probably need to jump 19 or like much higher than that. I jumped 19 the indoor season of my sophomore year. And that's when I was like, okay, I finally jumped 19 feet, but I like, there's still so many better Americans out there than me. I don't want to just go out and be like the fifth best in the country and then be like, I'm a professional athlete now. Woohoo. I was like, I want to be like either number two or number one, jumping like a foot higher than everyone else. Otherwise, I don't feel like I belong. Fast forward like a year or two, and I was consistently jumping over 19.4 and 19.6. And that's when I was like, okay, I could probably make a gig out of this. And then everything just got halted because COVID hit. So it had been my senior year. So I'd only been through 3.5 seasons, and they were like, okay. And they did this for every college athlete, yeah, which was extremely nice and forgiving of the NCAA. I'll give them that. I'll give them the props for being helpful to everyone who was affected by COVID. They said that, like, we know this is your last year of eligibility, but because COVID took it away from you, we'll give you an extra year and a free red shirt, which means like you can come back and you can train with the team, but you can't compete for the team at the competitions they go to. So I was like, no. I was like, no, I'm going to go professional. I don't really want to be in the college athletic things anymore. I don't know why. It's not like I had a distaste for the university or any of my teammates or faculty or classes or anything. It's just I didn't want to be in college athletics anymore. I just thought it was like, it's time to move on. Like, you know, like when you're just like doing something for such a long time, like maybe you're like playing video games or you're watching cartoons. How old were you when you stopped watching cartoons?
Oof, gosh, I feel like this is getting personal and deep. No, I'm just kidding. I don't even know. I stopped watching Saved by the Bell when I was in seventh grade. I'm not sure if that's... No, I might still watch Saved by the Bell today because of my four kids who love Saved by the Bell. Anyways,
that's fair. Yeah. Or like Tom and Jerry or something. Like you're watching Tom and Jerry and you're like, you know, I feel like I'm like it's time to move on from this. Like it's time to move on from this specific watching category. That's kind of how I felt about college athletics. I was like, it's just time to go. It's time to move on. And I got with a very nice woman. If there was ever an angel on this earth, her name is Karen Locke, and that is my manager. She's also Derek's manager back in the day of his professional pole vaulting. So I got with her, and she was extremely helpful and made me mature very fast because she does not take any crap from anyone, and she is just the boss woman of this track world. So at least that's how everyone sees her and treats her as such. So So got with her and then just took on that whole professional thing for the first year, or I guess outdoor season of my professional career. And it wasn't great. It started off kind of slow. I think I jumped like an 18.4 and an 18.8 over in Europe and came back and reevaluated some things. And then this indoor season started, and that's when everything kind of took off for the whole professional gig.
Yeah. So you make it on the team for the Olympics. Experience, is it totally different than you expect? Share this about the experience as a whole. You know, we're coming right off of the Olympics, basically.
Yeah, it's been, I think, like, yeah, I jumped on the 3rd. It's the 15th, so I went like
crazy.
12 days, less than 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was weird. So, well, for me, actually, it wasn't weird because, you know, it's my first Olympics. So the experiences that I had are normal to me. Yeah. Obviously, they're not normal because COVID took a damper on the whole thing and almost canceled it. And with it being postponed last year, it's a weird thing. If I'll be honest, if the Olympics didn't happen this year, if they weren't postponed last year to this year, I don't think I would have made that team. I wouldn't have even made the team, let alone gotten a medal. Just because the year of difference from training and maturity, both physically and mentally and emotionally and like all these things that just changed in the last like 365 days was so immense. And the amount of skill and repetition that we gained in that year made such a huge difference.
Cause wow.
No, last year, I think like if the Olympic trials had happened in the normal time, June 2020, I think I would have gotten like 8th. And I don't think I would have made that team just because of how serious we took it. And like, it was the same thing back in freshman year when I was like, okay, yeah, I could probably make a gig out of this after making a world championship team.
Yep.
It was the same thing. It was like, we didn't actually think that we could make an Olympic team until we got to the trials, having already jumped like 19.4 all season. And I was like, I don't even know if I can make this Olympic team. And this was like 2 months ago. I was like, I just don't know. And then my coach was like, you can make it if you just jump normal. And thankfully we did. It went well. And everything after that. But yeah, the Olympic experience. Derek, my coach, has been to three. He went to 04, 08, and 12. So I think it was like, what was 04? Athens, Beijing, and then London.
Yeah.
It's three in a row, three teams. Super cool thing to do. Very impressive as well, because he did it when he was 31, 35, and 39.
That's crazy.
It's super wild. And I'm doing this at 23, and my body already hurts. I can't imagine a 39-year-old making the Olympics and just rocking everyone's world. It was crazy. I got there, and after having done two self-tests at home, because they needed to verify you didn't have COVID, because Japan, 2 weeks before the Olympics even started, the Japanese government came out and said, we're in a state of emergency. Oof. So everyone was just like, oh God, it's like a 2020 repeat. And this was after the Olympic trials had already happened. So every U.S. sport and team had already been selected, made, and ready to go. Like, we're ready to get on a plane and go to Tokyo. And then, like I said, 2 weeks before the whole thing started, they were like, state of emergency, COVID's rampant. So that was really scary for everyone. Thankfully, they didn't cancel, but they were like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Self-test before you get there. It was it was different for everyone, but for me and my group that came in, it was a 5.5-hour processing at the Narita Airport in Tokyo. So that was stupid. It was so much time. I think we got there at like 3:30 or 4, and I didn't get to the actual village until like 10 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
Because the 5.5-hour processing, which is like, they test you like three times. They do a nasal swab, they do a spit test, a bunch of forehead stuff, and it was like checking your bags. It was a whole deal. Finally get to the village, and they tell us you have a saliva/spit test every single morning. Before you eat or drink anything, you need to spit in this tube, like up to here or something, and then they'll take it off, test it. They used Google Maps. Oh, I know. They used Google Maps to track your phone. So you couldn't have your phone anywhere further than 6 feet away from you. And the reason they did that was this thing called contact tracing. If my phone was next to Sam Kendricks, who is my American teammate and also fellow pole vaulter, if Sam Kendricks tests positive for COVID and our phones are right next to each other, they contact trace me to test me to make sure if I don't have COVID. Same thing for anyone who has COVID who's near someone who tests positive for it. They did that the entire time. Randomly, they would come up and like either drug test you for like performance enhancing drugs, or they would like COVID test you just because of people near you who may have tested positive, or them thinking you have because your temperature was too high, something like that. It was a wild ride. And then masks every time, everywhere. Unless you were eating or drinking, you had to have a mask on. Unless you were in your room. And if you had a roommate, you had to have your mask on when you were in your room.
Oh, wow.
So
top experience at the Olympics away from winning silver.
I think it was maybe like one or two. I had one or two really cool ones. One was Mondo Duplantis, the winner of the men's pole, the Olympic champion, has been a prodigy since he was born. And they're actually making a documentary about him right now called Born to Fly. So I'm super excited for when that comes out. It's supposed to be, the end is him winning the Olympics. And they knew that when they started making the film back in 2017.
They were fairly confident he was going to win. Huh?
They knew he was going to win. Well, because when I say this dude is a freak phenom, it's one of those, like, try to compare it to something. If I had to compare it to something, this may be a long shot, but in our generation, there's only like one or two people who are so impactful on the world that they reside in that they'll be remembered for a super long time. So like, Michael Jackson is going to be remembered forever because for his generation of music, he was the king.
Yep.
In Mondo's generation of pole vault, he is the Michael Jackson of pole vault. It's just how good he is. It's just how talented he is. It's just how hard he works. It's just, he is that great. He's a phenom. He's extremely talented, and it's just, you can't really beat him. If he's on, he's on. You're not winning. You're not beating him. And, even when he's off, in the indoor season, I had a shot to beat him. It was some indoor meet in France, and he only jumped like 19.3, but he did it in two jumps. Like he jumped eight, he came in at like 18.4, and then he passed all the way to 19.3 and made it on a first attempt. And then I jumped 19.3 and I was like, I can beat him. And I didn't jump the next hike because I just didn't jump it. I just missed a few times at the next one. But even on a bad day with a bum foot, he still beat everyone in the competition. So if that tells you a little bit about how good Mondo is. But the cool thing about that is that we're also very good friends because I've known him since he was an eighth grader in high school. We used to compete against each other all the time. But he's from Louisiana, so whenever I saw him, he was at like a national level competition. Yep. So we've been going at it since high school. These big competitions in high school, and then he was only in college at LSU for 1 year, and then he went professional. Because he came in, he broke the indoor and the outdoor collegiate records in his freshman year, and then went professional for Puma. And now he's the world record holder as of last year.
That's insane.
It's crazy. But the experience that was cool about it was that Mondo and I, the entire time, both for the preliminary rounds and the final, were sitting next to each other the entire time, just laughing our butts off about stupid crap, just joking around the entire time, completely forgetting about the world around us, just joking about like memes and stuff that him and his brothers would talk about and things that I would do like back home that he thought was funny. It was just, that was probably one of the cooler experiences. And then also at the same time, in the warmups of the final, they were playing some of my favorite songs. I listen to a lot of 80s rock. So I love Queen. One of my favorite songs by them is Don't Stop Me Now.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing. And that came on while we were jumping in warmups. And I was like, oh, if this isn't a sign from God that today is going to be a good day, I don't know what is. But that was probably cool. And the experience that came out of that was me and my new German buddy. His name is Oleg. We were just kind of like bopping back and forth on the runway again, just completely forgetting about that we were pole vaulting at the Olympics, more focusing on the cool music that was going on in the background.
That's awesome and hilarious both. So Chris, pursuing a goal, advice to someone who's got a goal of any kind, whether it's to lose weight, to win a gold medal, be an Olympian, like what would be your advice to that person?
When you look at someone, there's probably two sides of a coin that you can get from them, or two sides of a coin of people that look at them. There's people who are going to be like, that's a really good person. He's a good athlete who's going to do great things. But there's also people who are doubtful just because they're either pessimistic or they just don't like the guy for some reason. They'll say like, he's not going to be that good. I never wanted to meet the expectations of the guy or the people who doubted me.
Yeah.
I never wanted someone to be like, see, I knew I was right. He's not going to be good, or he's not good now. He won't be ever. I never wanted someone to be right about that. And it's a terrible thing. I shouldn't be caring about how much people think about me in that way or in that respect. But like, I never wanted someone to be right about me being bad, either a bad person or a bad friend or even a bad athlete. I never wanted someone to be right about me being not good. And I just never wanted that to happen. So I just worked so extremely hard.
Yeah.
but you know, at the end of the day, even in that respect, I would always come back to, even if someone was like, see, I knew he'd never be good at pole vault, I could always come back and say, yeah, but I'm a good person, so you're wrong about that one. So I would work at both times. And I would always remember that as cool as pole vaulting is and as cool as like being an Olympic athlete is, if people think I'm rude and mean and just like conceited and don't want to talk to me, I'm unapproachable, like that's worse than being good and having an Olympic medal. I would rather be like still at the high school level, jumping 12.3 my sophomore year, but be a great person, someone that someone can come up to and ask for advice or come up to in like a hard time. You know, I never wanted to be like, just like rude or bad or unapproachable or anything like that. So even if someone was like, see, I knew he'd never be good at pole vault. Yeah. I could always come back and be like, yeah, but I'm a good person. So got you there. but yeah, that was probably the reason I pursued being a good pole vaulter so much, is because not only did I want to be like a good person or something like that, I wanted to have something else. Like I wanted to be good at something.
Yeah.
I wanted to be not necessarily remembered for something, but I wanted to add something to something that I love so much. And I love the sport of track and field, not just pole vault. And I wanted to add something to it.
No, that's fantastic. And thanks for being so honest too, with your answer there. Failure. What's a failure that you've had, life-wise, pole vault wise, whatever area you want to talk about, and what did you learn through failing?
the whole thing about pole vault is that you get three attempts, so you fail all the time. I mean, you miss a bar, you know, and you have to come back and make adjustments from that. But I think that, I've done not well in pole vault a lot. I mean, it's just how it goes. Like sometimes, like, you know, Lionel Messi is going to have a bad day at soccer, you know, and I will have a bad day at pole vault. I still have bad days at pole vault. And track and field or any like professional sport is extremely like mental. So some people just, they don't hit it as hard as they should, or they don't, you know, run at it as fast as they should, or they don't take it as seriously as they think they can because they're doubting either themselves or their ability or their coaching, or either way, they're doubting something about it. And I think there was a time like freshman and sophomore year, same time I had that bad breakup with my girlfriend. I was just like not really feeling anything. And that was probably when it was just going through failure after failure. Cause one, the loss of the girlfriend, and two, the just consistent losing in the pole vault. And I just got really tired of it. And the way I handled it is probably not the best way to handle it, but I just got really mad at myself. And I don't recommend that for everyone, because if you get mad at yourself, sometimes you tend to get worse. But my way of handling it was I was just super mad at myself. And I was like, quit failing, or like quit. I would say like cuss words to myself, like in the mirror, like quit being a little pansy. But it ended up like fixing itself just because I was like, I refuse to be a failure. I refuse to like lose as much as I am right now. Like, I was like, this is when I'm just going to get this loss out of the way, and then I'm never going to do it again. But yeah, my way was probably not the best way, but I would just get mad at myself all the time for losing.
When you fail now, let's say when you've had a streak of not performing well pole vault wise, what do you do to overcome that now?
It's probably the same thing, to be honest. I keep saying it's not a good thing to do, but I just get mad. Like, there was one meet, I've only jumped under 19 feet once this entire year, indoors and out. And it was a meet in Sweden. I went and I jumped 18.10, I think. So still not that super far off, but I was like, dude, you've got to be kidding me. You suck so bad. What are you doing? And then I just remember going to practice that next week after I got home. And even my coach, he was like, what are you doing, man? And I was running harder, and I was running more than I was given. Like, he would give me like, do like 6 100s at like, at like 60%. And I ended up running them at like 90%. And he was like, why are you running so hard? I was like, dude, I'm mad. Like, I can't lose to these guys again. And he was like, okay, but don't kill your body doing it. And then he would like give me a lift, and I would lift way more than I was supposed to. And then I would like there was one time, I like 2 years ago, when like the pole vaulting wasn't going well. And I literally, he was like, yeah, go jog a cool down lap. Like after the hard workout, I ran so much like doing this cool down that Derek thought I was doing, that I ended up throwing up because of how much I was running afterwards. Cause I was just so mad at myself. But yeah, I just get, it's such a bad habit. I get mad at myself so I don't lose again. So I just train until I win again.
How about that? So a question from my oldest son, a freshman in high school,
right?
He, I told him I was connecting with you. He wanted to ask, how do you handle stress?
Right.
My oldest is a bit of a perfectionist. I'm not sure if that's true of you or not, but is definitely a perfectionist. And so the amount of pressure he puts on himself is 10 times greater than any pressure anybody else is putting on him in his life.
No, for sure.
So how do you handle stress?
Does your son play any sports?
He's not into sports. He's more music. So electric guitar.
Perfect.
Is his thing.
What's he play? Guitar?
Yeah. Electric guitar, acoustic guitar, the baritone in band, and he just taught himself piano.
So all around talented in music. That's awesome.
He's talented.
I could never.
We still have no idea where he came from. So he wasn't adopted, but it feels like he was.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. Music is a really good, like, it's a really good outlet. But same thing with like with me and pole vault, I would recommend to him with the stress, like, because if he's a perfectionist, it's even worse. Cause he's like, I need to master this piece like by next week, or I'm not as good as I thought I was, or I need to get better on this instrument. Cause I'm sure he's better on electric than he is acoustic, yep. Or he's better on like the baritone than he is whatever else he's playing. Yep. So he's probably like, I want to get all of these equal across the board, or I'm not as good as a musician as I thought I am. And that's, the worst thing that someone can do because they just put like more and more and more pressure on themselves. And I'm not really a perfectionist. I just like to, as long as I'm not losing, like it's not like I have to go out and win everything, because I got second at the Olympics and I'm totally fine with that. That's a win for me. Even if I went and I just made the finals, I was like, that's a win for me. I don't need to get first every time. I just need to meet a default baseline goal of mine that I go, that I set when I go into things. And I think one of the hardest things and one of the most stressful things is putting so much pressure on yourself, because that's all you think about. He only thinks about playing guitar, or he only thinks about getting this set done, or this set memorized, or whatever. He just wants to like perfect this specific thing. It's the best way. It's the best thing you can do when you're getting stressed out about this one specific thing is to step away from it. The reason I play a video game, like I bought a gaming PC. And I play video games probably not every day, but I try to like...
This is a safe place to confess. Exactly. Continue on though.
No, for sure. I play video games a decent bit, more than probably the average professional athlete.
Okay, 4 hours a day. I said it. No,
exactly. No, you're probably right on the money there, to be honest. but I mean, I play video games. I hang out with my girlfriend. I clean my apartment. I go out and I go off... like off-roading or something like that. I do something that doesn't make me think about pole vaulters, just sports in general. And I think if you just stuck thinking about, you know, I had a bad day pole vaulting today. If I go home and I just stew in my bedroom for the next 8 hours until I fall asleep thinking about how I had a bad day in pole vault, the next day is just going to be worse. And it just continues along that downward cycle. And I hated doing that. I did that my freshman year, and that's when I kind of like snapped out of it. I was like, I got to find a hobby, or I got to find something that's not pole vaulting to get me out of this like hole. So I picked up, you know, pole vaulting. I started working at a coffee shop because I wanted to focus on something that wasn't pole vault. I wanted to be so far away from pole vault at some time so that I wouldn't think about it, that it was impossible to do. So I would either go to a coffee shop, or I would go hang out at the park with my friends playing frisbee golf. Do something that gets you away from the thing that's stressing you out.
What about, that's so good, by the way. What about in the moment? Stress in the moment of, okay, I'm at the competition. What do you do with stress there?
Well, for me specifically, one, I love competition. So if I'm, attempts matter in a pole vault competition. So if I clear 19.6 on a first attempt, and then Mondo clears 19.6 on a first attempt, and then he clears 19.10 on a first attempt, but I didn't clear it on a first attempt. He's got the upper hand on me because he cleared it on a first attempt, and just first attempts matter.
Yep.
I love that. I love it when people are like, put the hammer down on me and they're like, okay, I just did this better than you, try to beat it. And I love that. But in the stress of a competition, I'm probably one of the more optimistic people, not as in like, I can do this, or like, I know I can do this. Not like a cocky thing, but it's like, the sky doesn't fall. The world doesn't end if Mondo clears something a higher bar than me on a first attempt. It's still there. I still have two attempts. I still have a job to do. And just because, you know, someone did something better than me doesn't mean I lost. It just means that like, okay, I'm still doing what I love. It, like if your son is playing guitar and he messes up a chord for the 50th time, he's like, man, at least I still have both my hands and arms and I can read music. I can still play this. I can still keep this going. It's like nothing just stops or ends just because you lose once or twice.
That's good. Chris, we talked about it a little bit before as far as God in your life. If you want to share just background on that, like upbringing and what that looks like for you personally.
Right, yeah. So my grandpa, my dad's dad was, he was also he was a priest or a pastor or a minister, whatever they wanted to call it. I think in the Anglican faith.
Chris asked before recording what he should call me, Pastor Adam or Father. I said Father might be.
Maybe a little weird. I just didn't want to offend. I never want to offend anyone, you know? So.
Hey, you guy. Yeah.
You guy. You with the face. but yeah, so my dad's dad was a priest at a church. So they did the whole, like, they lived in the house right outside the church. So my dad grew up you know, in a church, basically. So he was super religious. My mom was raised Roman Catholic, so she was also super religious. And then they came together and had my sister and I, and been going to church since, oh my God, I can't remember. Probably, I mean, I was baptized when I was like 6 months old, so I was extremely young. And then I went through the whole confirmation thing. And at the same time, I think I was an altar boy, in the Anglican church, they called it an acolyte. So,
yeah.
So I did the whole like carrying the crucifix, like all the way down the aisles and everything, and like lighting the candles and filling the bread bowls and filling the wine, and all of that. And I did that from the ages of like 8 all the way to senior year in high school. So I was, I was a wizard at tying that like rope around my waist, wearing the white robe and everything. So it was a whole deal. And, I mean, even still to this day, I'm a little bit, I'm never too busy to go to church. And thankfully my girlfriend is full on Catholic and so are her parents. It was actually a very romantic thing. So my girlfriend's mom has been Catholic from the start, but my girlfriend's dad wasn't Catholic. So I think it was like one of their anniversary gifts, but he went and got converted to Catholicism.
Yeah.
And I mean, ever since then, they've both just been super religious. So, I mean, getting out of high school and getting away from my parents who would like ask me to go to church every day to then going to church with my girlfriend all the time, it just made it a little bit more refreshing. And then at the same time, learning more about the Catholic faith and all that. So it's a very interesting thing. Again, it's another thing you can focus on when you're not trying to get stressed out by pole vault or playing the guitar.
That's right.
But yeah, and I mean, still to this day, I still credit God to literally everything I've ever done that's ever been a success.
Wow.
You know, things happen, and whether they be good or bad, it sounds super cliche, but I do believe that God has set everyone on a path, no matter like if he's given us free will or not. I mean, I think he's given us a path regardless. So, I mean, that's also probably one of the reasons I don't really get stressed out. If I get second at the Olympics or, you know, second at anything that I really wanted to do well at, it was like, I mean, that's fine. I'm still living and breathing. God still has a plan for me. I don't know what's going to happen next year or the year after that, but I'm assuming it's going to be good just because, you know, God made it. So yeah, I wouldn't say I'm like super religious. I'm not going to church every Sunday as I should be. And I don't pray as much as I should, but I do think about it every day. And I do, you know, send prayers to people who I know are struggling or are going to need some kind of good faith in their life in that way, shape, or form.
Oh man, so good. During low points, has God ever come into play during kind of the lowest of the lowest for you?
Maybe a little bit, you know. There was a time like back in like my freshman, sophomore year, like when things were like low, and I wasn't really asking God to like fix it. You know, because you can't just reach down and be like, yep, everything's good now. Like, unfortunately, that's not just how it works. But I think I would more like ask for forgiveness, because I always thought of it as like a karma thing. It was the same kind of thing as a bad habit where I would blame myself for doing bad and I would get mad at myself. It was the same thing. I was like, times are going bad right now, so I must have done something bad to deserve this a few years ago or even last week when I didn't like give a homeless dude on the street a dollar, or if I like didn't open the door for some old lady or something like that. I was always like, times are bad right now because it's karma, or, you know, I didn't ask God for forgiveness at one point in time, so I probably need to do that. And it's still kind of the same mentality today, but I'm a little bit more realistic and optimistic about things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Chris, I'm so grateful just for your honesty throughout.
Was
genuinely refreshing. Just want to thank you. Go and follow Chris on Instagram. Where can we find you on Instagram?
Nilsson Vault. Just my last name and then the word vault, all one word.
Awesome. And then it's going to be just an honor to continue cheering you on and celebrating you. And I know there's wonderful things ahead. So thank you so much again for being on the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It was really fun.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.